Do I need to be doing a catering company in a restaurant? Probably not. But I get a lot of enjoyment out of both of them, and it's loads of fun, and it's a different world. And if I was doing neither of those things or just one of them, I'd be longing for that interaction or that mentality or that mindset of what I'm missing.
Today on Dirty Linen, we are talking to a chef who seems to pop up in all kinds of places doing very interesting things. Petros Deletas is a Melbourne chef who I've seen in restaurants, I've seen at the Royal Melbourne Show leading judging there. And if I was to sneak my way into some footy team kitchens, I would see him there as well. He is the chef director of Adonis Catering and the head chef of Epoca in Carlton. Petros, welcome to Dirty Linen.
Thanks so much for having me. It's really nice being on this side now when I normally listen to you guys in the kitchen.
Well, we love hearing about people listening to the podcast in the kitchen, helping people with their prep and, yeah, connecting people in the industry who perhaps don't get to spend a lot of time in the same room. So, yeah, thanks for putting us on there. Petros, introduce yourself. How do you describe what you do? Because there's so much going on.
Look, I'm someone who gets bored very quickly and easily. So I have to do lots of things to keep me stimulated and excited constantly. And then I like do this thing where I do too much and I have far too much on my plate, and then I'm sort of semi-regret it for about half a second, and then I remember, no, actually this is fun. It's fun bouncing between a catering company. It's fun bouncing between a restaurant. It's fun doing all these different things, because these are the things that I set myself up for years ago. Like I wanted to have multiple diverse and multiple, you know, different skill sets through my career. I didn't want to just be stuck as being a restaurant chef, because I just kept hearing from all the pastry chefs and all the catering chefs that there's a different world out there. You start doing all those extracurricular things that you put your hand up for as an apprentice and doing all these external events, and you actually find out that there's a whole big, beautiful world of our industry that isn't always, you know, when you're so focused in the restaurant world, you stay in the restaurant world. You don't actually veer out and you don't look outwards, but you go off and do, I don't know, the Starlight Foundation events, or you go and do Formula One Grand Prix or Spring Racing Carnival. There's a whole different big bad world of catering and what else can be done in the industry. And that leads, and those possibilities, opportunities up you up to do other things, you know, without doing extracurricular stuff when I was an apprentice at the press club, I wouldn't have found out how to do cookbooks or how TV shows are produced and sit in the background and stuff and see how that world goes on, because that's a whole different beast as well.
That's so interesting, Petros, because, you know, I think we talk to a lot of chefs, and I think a lot of people only, I guess, realize that there are so many different pathways in hospitality later in their career. I mean, do you think it's just the fact that you were at press club and there were so many other things going on that opened it up for you early on? Or is that just your nature to keep, opening doors and, you know, poking your head through and seeing what's going on?
Yeah, the latter. I always wanted to stick my head in and see what was happening. I've always known I wanted to own a business. I've always known, like, the second I from about 14, 15 years of age, I knew I wanted to cook the rest of my life. I was totally in it from the get-go, and I think I did work experience at RACV Club, and then I was like, well, I came home from that 2 weeks, and I was like, yeah, this is what I'm doing. So the second that happened, I finished year 12. I was offered to not finish year 12, and thankfully I stayed at high school. But I finished off high school, and pretty much, like, I think I did my last exam and I was at work at RACV Club like 3 days later. So, like, went straight into it. And even then, like, just before my apprenticeship started, they had no spot for me at RACV Club in the kitchen. It was like the only time they were actually staffed. So they said to me, Petros, you want to do purchasing? And I said, what's purchasing? So I sat in the office and I did purchasing for a couple of weeks, and that made me understand the ordering systems and everything, how a big hotel manages ordering for, you know, 10, 12 outlets through one little office, and how all the produce comes in and, you know, beverage and everything as well. So it's
So right from the beginning, you saw that there were different aspects to this world. I mean, what was it, those 2 weeks of work experience, you know, what about it made you realize this is what you wanted to do for the rest of your life?
The buzz of service, the camaraderie, the constant shit talking between staff, the banter, I suppose. It felt really good and it felt right. And I don't know what was like, it wasn't my first That 2 weeks of work experience wasn't my first understanding of the industry. Like, by this stage, I was already at my brother's pizza shop in Diamond Creek for a few years. And then, so I already liked the buzz of service. I already liked the adrenaline rush of service. I already enjoyed all those things. I just didn't know. I just didn't have any direction towards honing in towards certain skills and skill sets.
And how did things progress through your apprenticeship and beyond?
I jumped straight into doing competitions as an apprentice, because obviously at RSCV Club, they, you know, or hotel like atmospheres, you get thrown into competitions and stuff. As long as you can write a really good application, you'll probably get yourself into most competitions at the time. But I was doing a lot of them at the time, and just opening networks and opening doors and just making myself known to people. I wasn't the best cook in the lineup, hardly ever, but it was more that I was just opening up, getting myself out there and creating my own little network. And as you said earlier, just popping up and being involved.
Mm, so interesting. And so did you qualify while you were at Press Club?
I got pushed. It was about a year into my apprenticeship. I did the Daryl Cox, which was the last Daryl Cox that happened. So Daryl Cox Memorial for 20 years was the apprentice cooking competition in Victoria. It was run by the Australian Hotels Association. Now you're jogging my memory. And then a whole heap of chefs that we know of now has definitely been involved in it. So the George Calabaro, Shane D'Elia, Shannon Bennett, all these guys, you know, the list continues. But for a good 20 solid years, apprentices who went through hotels all were involved in this competition. Adrian Richardson, Sean Wade, I think. Scott Wade? Sean Wade. I can't remember his name. But they were all involved with it. I did that. And then through that, George Calabaro's at the time was in between 1 Fitzroy Street and Press Club, I think. And he sort of coached us for that 3 or 4 weeks before the competition. And then once the competition happened, he said, "I'm opening up a Greek restaurant. Do you want to come?" And I was like, "Yeah, okay, fine." Sounds good. So I followed him there. It was my first you know, talk about baptism by fire. Like, it was understanding, you know, the safety net of a hotel group with all these chefs and staff around you to cover your sick day, to give you annual leave whenever you wanted, endless people to talk to, a HR department, all these things where the safety net is what I refer to is gone. So now you're in the restaurant world, you plunged in there, baptism by fire, a lot of buzz around Press Club at the time in 2006, 2007. Obviously this is pre-MasterChef as well. So this is, you know, around a time where it was, the industry was very much at its organic stage of how news got out. You know, I was vividly remember reading about John Lethlin and Matt Preston writing articles, you know, in the Epicure 15 plus years ago, 20 years ago. So it's, you know, it's a different world to what we have now. You know, there's no social media. There definitely isn't food podcasts going, so or any podcasts in general. So it's a different world completely. And yeah, I jumped into Press Club and stayed there for about 7 years. I worked my way around the company. And then from Press Club, I went to Maha. By this stage, Maha broke away and Shane and George parted ways. And Shane used to say at the time, he got me in the divorce, like the little puppy dog. I followed him. and then exclusively for 2 years for Shane, all I did, and this was, you know, going back to career pathways, all I did for Shane was all of his external stuff. So all of his, Shane D'Elia Spice Journey on SBS, we did 3 series of that, the cookbook that resonated from that, all the Western Bulldog stuff, Mercedes stuff, Etihad Stadium, Spring Racing Carnival, Roland by Shane D'Elia. All that stuff was done in that realm. So I was barely in the restaurant. If I was, I was there for a couple of days at a time. Doing a la carte service, but the rest of it, I was like Shane's man on the ground to, you know, get all the recipe development done and all that stuff. You know, you got 30 recipes to do for every TV series of Spain, Morocco, or Turkey, or Lebanon, Iran, whatever. And that's, you know, pretty involved. And there's a lot of recipe testing happening when Shane came back. And then those recipes became dishes that we did for all these events as like sort of cross promotion of all these different things that Shane had going on. So, and his brand.
Wow. I mean, you paint such a good picture of that time in the restaurant world, and also how many different things you were able to do. And I mean, I guess as you were doing all that stuff for Shane and the TV shows and all that, that was that period where, yeah, MasterChef came online, social media geared up. I mean, it was actually a real change in the landscape and the way that people found out about stuff and communicated around food generally, wasn't it?
Absolutely, hugely. Like, look, it's we could all say now it's a lot better. Not to say it was bad back then, but it's definitely the industry has progressed in a, obviously really quickly, but obviously in a way that we're all, still enjoying it. Like, it's not a forgiving business. Let's be honest. Like, we're all, it's great that gone are the days of 18-hour days of, not seeing your family and doing 6, 7 days a week and on end like it was. Well, again, make myself sound old when I was an apprentice to be that guy. But it's really good to just look to be able to spend time with families and stuff. I always wondered, I thought as an apprentice, like watching George and Shane and all these other chefs that I was working with back then, like, is this sustainable for their lives? Like, I understand they're chasing money and they're chasing, to keep investors and everyone happy and to keep their own mental. Their career stimulated and their mental capacity to want to earn and for their, whether it be monetarily or for their business. But is it sustainable to do these hours in the 30s and 40s and 50s? So obviously you meet a whole heap of people in your life and your career, and it's horses for courses, Danny. So it's like, either you do want to keep doing those hours, it's you either talk about you either keep yourself in that life and miss out on other things, or you do it for a few years and you experience other things as well. So it's up to, you can make your own mind up about it and what your own personal journey is for it.
But did you always have this view that that sort of intensity, that prolonged intensity, was not the path that you wanted to go down?
No, look, I come from a very European family, European background. You always have time for your family. You always maneuver how it's going to work. Now, obviously, I run a catering company right now that involves me to be there 40, 50 hours a week, and it also involves me to run a restaurant in Dupaca doing 30 to 50 hours a week. And, gratefully, in this day and age, I can do a lot of the stuff that I have to do off my phone. And just because I've got really good staff in both spaces, from Cranbourne to Carlton, I've managed to be able to keep them both somehow going. But for my personal self, it's more about, as much as it's about really good staff around you and really good people around you, it's more about that I need to keep what I do for Adonis. I can't do at Epoca. I can't roast a duck leg. I can't, sorry, I can't roast, I can't, there's no point in me ordering Great Ocean Road ducks at Cranbourne for Adonis Catering because my athletes won't get it. My athletes are, as much as I love them, are big children. And so, spaghetti bolognese and poached chicken and brown rice and sweet potato and broccoli is all they're really going to want to eat. Now, as I can tweak things and change things up for them and do a healthy version of chicken parmigiana, I can make ricotta gnocchi for them till I go blue in the face, but it won't sustain my creative output for me to just do that only 12 months of the year and be happy.
So you need more of that sort of fine dining, produce-driven interest that you can get at.
Yeah, I need handmade pasta in my life, Danny. I need to do that stuff. I need to, bone out chickens, bone out fish, teach staff how to do that stuff as well. Go through this process of, still making jus and sauces over 2, 3, 4 days, and all that fun stuff. I've just managed to find now. Obviously, I'm a dad now, so it's a different world completely. We have a little one. I have a wife. We have a house with his, nurturing her and my wife as well, and my child as well. So, and keeping all that little family going, and then, trying to involve them as much as possible. So it's a look. Let's be honest, there's a lot of balls up in the air, and you got to get good at catching them.
Yeah, well, which I'm sure you are. And speaking of catching balls, let's talk about the work that you do with sporting teams. So Adonis Catering looks after Carlton Football Club and Melbourne City Football Club, soccer. tell us about that. Like, what is the role that you play there?
So normally all AFL teams, whether they're interns or not, have dietitians. Throw in almost every other sporting team in the land as well. Whether they have budgets or not is a different story. But if Melbourne City Football Club, for example, they're my biggest client. So I've been their chef for almost 5 years now. So I followed them from Bundoora to Cranbourne. Cranbourne, they're building this state-of-the-art facility for all their players and their athletes. They've got a men's team in the A-League, a women's team in the A-League women's. They've got a youth program for the NPL, and they've got an academy. Academy is under 13s to under 21s. And they've got football schools for the little kids, under 5s to under 12s, until they make their way into the academy. And the academy is just a pathway program to train kids to either push them into the A-League or push them over to Europe and get contracts there, which happens sometimes. So that, how that involves me is, you know, all these kids need adequate nutrition, or athletes, you know, and we're dealing from 8-year-olds to 34-year-olds. I think the oldest bloke on the list right now is 34 years old. So there's nutrition there to teach all of them and their understanding. A lot of athletes are trained to think that, carbs are bad and they should only have protein, whether it's in a protein shake or loads of chicken. They have to have protein. It's their thing that they're chasing. But then they speak to a dietitian, or they speak to someone like me, and who I understand, because I spend a lot of time with dietitians now and I sort of speak a similar language to them. I'm not a trained dietitian, but I have spent enough time with them to know what's happening. And then we sort of figure things out from there on what's required. The weekly menu gets dictated how many days you're away back from match day. So then the day before a match, they have to have spaghetti bolognese. It's especially at Melbourne City Football Club. They're very superstitious. You can't diverse from spaghetti bolognese, so which was a laugh. I've managed to maneuver in some fresh focaccia, which the boys love and girls love. And then we've got some ricotta gnocchi now that we do for them too. But then it's different, like the different budgets for different athletes, for different football clubs lead us to different things. You know, we've dealt with Hawthorn Football Club, Richmond Football Club, St Kilda Footy Club, and they all do different. And obviously feeding men's athletes to women's athletes are two different kettles of fish. Normally there's some more dietary requirements with the women's teams, what there is with the men's teams. But either way, you just figure things out and how to give them the adequate nutrition.
And so is this when they're training, like, you know, they do their training and then they come and sit down for a meal together? Like, when are you actually serving them this food?
Yeah. So I'll get sent their training programs for the week. So some days they'll just train on the pitch. Other days they'll do training, then gym. Other times they'll do analysis, where they have to sit there in a dark room with the massive TV screen on and look at play-by-play from their previous game or their upcoming game or opposition stuff or whatever, and they go through it all. And sometimes if the doors aren't closed, you hear the head coach. I actually almost said head chef, because a head chef is like a head coach, where they just say some words to inspire and remind people what's happening, what's happened in certain stages of the game.
So as a Carlton supporter, I really want to hear about what you do for Carlton Football Club, especially as we're sitting with, you know, 4 wins and 1 loss after 5 rounds, which is a very different position to be in. Is it the special spag bowl recipe for Carlton?
Nah, look, when teams are going well, it's really easy to say, yeah, it must be what they're eating. However, when teams are going bad, it's also the same conversation. So we're looking after the championship, the reigning defending champions of the A-League right now, and you know, as much as I can say it's all us, it's a mixture of things. So, yeah, look, the Baggers are doing real well, and all supporters should be really excited. Look, I think it's got more to do with Michael Voss more than anything. The biggest thing that impressed me, and I'm an AFL fan as much as I'm a sporting fan in general, but like the biggest thing that impressed me, normally in like November when they come back from pre-season, normally only the 1 to 4 year players come back, and that's like a small group of like 40 to 50 players. Maybe a couple of injured athletes are in there as well, just to get themselves back into rehab earlier. And then normally the older players come back like 25s plus, normally come back like 3-4 weeks later. But because Michael Voss is the new coach, you want to impress the new coach, like you want to impress the new head chef when they start up. They all got in first session back. So the full squad was back. Everyone was in there. Everyone was keen. And it was, you know, we don't serve at Icon Park because Icon Park has got some refurbishments going on. But we go in and we're talking to the dietitians and the coaches and stuff probably weekly or fortnightly that we go and speak to everyone and just double check everything's going through and everyone's happy and if there's any tweaks and changes we need to make and if there's certain athletes with certain nutritional requirements, if we need to check up on them and make sure they're all right.
And how individualized are these programs? You know, like do individual athletes, are they allowed to put in different preferences? You know, is it like the Australian Open where the meals can be really quite bespoke?
Yeah, it is sometimes. And more, I don't really deal with prima donnas, but I can see where it does happen. I have a dietary list at my kitchen at Cranbourne and sometimes it gets long and other times, I don't know, I sort of put it up on the wall so everyone can see it. So players sort of get self-conscious when they start being difficult and if they're being difficult for a reason or if they're actually being difficult because they need to be. Because I don't mind if athletes that want to be pescatarian for 40 days before Easter, that's no issue at all. Or if they genuinely don't like rare meat. But it's going to go up on the wall and then normally they conform to their teammates. So it's a bit of a laugh to just, you know, point out, you know, then it's just, you know, the eating habits of understanding of, you know, what people can and can't eat. If it's a genuine thing like Adam Saad being halal, that's totally fine. Like it's not the issue. But sometimes players will come in saying, oh, I'm vegan. And then the next week they're eating spaghetti bolognese.
It'd be interesting to take that approach with restaurant customers if everyone had to have their dietaries like as a label on the table. It'd be like, you know, I'm vegetarian, but I will eat duck. A bit of that would be quite interesting for people to take accountability for their preferences. So what's the satisfaction that you get out of this kind of work, Petros?
Look, it's a different world completely. When I've tried to, so a few years ago, I tried to only do Adonis and not go back into the restaurants, but you know, the pandemic happened. Every time I try and get out of this bloody restaurant world, Danny, I just get dragged back in again. So it's, but you know, it comes down to what people you got around you. So it's, again, the team at Epoca are great. Angie and Guy I've known for forever. Angie I've known since I was an apprentice. So it's a really nice environment to be back and forth with and enjoy and to, you know, get the best of both worlds, I suppose. Sorry, what was your question again?
No, it's more like you spun it around because I was asking what the satisfaction was that you got out of the catering, like for the, and looking after the sporting teams, but you spun it around to saying why you couldn't leave restaurants, which is actually a great answer. I suppose what I'm hearing from you is that these different worlds do draw you in different ways.
Yeah. Look, the catering world for athletes is more about, it's my stamp towards, you know, athletes don't have to just eat sweet potato, brown rice and broccoli. They're so, the education around athletes in the dietitian realm, and it's not to no fault of dietitians entirely. It's sort of it's a health industry thing and that's its own podcast. But athletes aren't looked after in the way they should be, I feel. So, yeah, you got some vegan athletes and pescatarian athletes, XYZ, whatever, whatever. But the reality is a lot of these athletes don't know enough about their own nutrition to what gets them the best. You know, I've seen athletes firsthand who eat properly and don't, you know, and especially post ASADA Essendon scandal here in Australia, football teams and sporting teams don't rely on protein powders and supplements as much anymore. Nowhere near to the level that they did 10, 15 years ago. So now nutrition is massive and they have to make sure, clubs have to make sure what's being given to their players, to their biggest assets on the field, is proper and is looked after and these catering companies are looking after them. I'm not the only catering company in this realm. There's plenty of catering companies doing this stuff. There's plenty of fans of clubs who are just fans of clubs, who own restaurants or food places, and they just want to, you know, support their local team or their favorite team or their favorite player. But for us, we're trying to make sure that athletes don't, you know, have a better understanding of food and nutrition. And that's sort of where we've lent in with the YouTube channel and what we do on creating recipes and stuff with our athletes and just showing them that they can eat, you know, a more diverse range of things to make them happier and not be stuck to the mundane approach of the same stuff over and over and over. Because chicken, brown rice and broccoli, let's be honest, gets really boring. So,
well, I suppose it sounds like you're trying to inject you know, this idea that food is about pleasure, like it's not just functional. Yes, it has to perform its function in terms of nutrition and sustenance, but how much better is life when you can enjoy your food as well?
Yeah. How much better is life if you can have, you know, lamb shoulder from, you know, Tasmania? How much better is life if you can have roast beef with, or a chicken parmigiana with a high protein cheese on top and crumbed in pumpkin seeds instead of panko breadcrumbs and pan fried? You know what I mean? So it's like, it's all these like little nuances that I've just changed. And a lot of the things that we've got on our menus now that have become staples, me just talking to athletes and saying, what do you actually want to eat? And then one of them, you know, that, the chicken parmigiana thing, that's where it started from. Like, oh, I really love eating chicken parmigianas, but like, you're never going to eat that because your dietitian and your head coach are going to cut your feet off if you try and eat those things all the time. And so that's where we started playing around with, right, what can we crumb a chicken breast in to make it higher in protein? We're definitely not going to deep fry it. Let's hook up with Pumpkin Seeds Australia out in ovens and use their pumpkin seeds and coat pumpkin seeds over some chicken breasts. Let's do, what cheese can we use? Parmesan cheese isn't the worst cheese in the world, but there's better, higher protein cheeses. So that's where we hook up with, that's a mortar cheese, and the buffalo mozzarella leaf is really nice to use as well. So as much as all these things just sound like plugs to companies I deal with, but that's the reality of what I try and bring everyone close to me together. And that's why I heavily rely on all my suppliers and farmers and everyone who we deal with. I try and bring them in and do as much as we can with them and sort of keep everyone involved.
Yeah, it's so interesting because, I mean, I feel like it's an education piece where, I mean, you're sort of creating better eaters in general, and you're also, I suppose, that you're turning them into people who might actually appreciate a restaurant like Epoca a bit more. Perhaps, you know, they wouldn't have thought that was a place that they could go. I'd love you to talk about the way that you're bringing education into your role as head chef of Epoca, like an inner city restaurant, beautiful building, you know, such an incredibly heartfelt sense of hospitality from owner Angie Janikadakis. Like, tell me about the way you train the chefs that work with you in the kitchen and what you think's perhaps important to show them that is perhaps being a little bit left out of some of the industry practices these days.
I don't think I've got a foolproof method that works for everyone, Danny, but the reality is the best ways I've been trained over the years is with the intent towards what's happening. What's happening around you and how, because every kitchen's different and every kitchen dances its own dance. So it's understanding the dance as soon as you get in there. So when you're a new staff member who comes into our kitchens, I'm more about the things that have to be done every day is understanding what's, you know, your familiarity towards your setup. You know, your chopping board's always in the right spot. Your knives are close by. Your salt's set up. Your tasting spoons are set up. And it's just going from there. So your section's always set up, no matter what. I always deal in worst case scenario situations, and it's more from, I'm more of a momentum build mentality from the day before into the next day. So, you know, we're going to have lamb or beef in the oven overnight. So we walk in the next day, we make sure, you know, our lamb and beef is sorted for that day because it's already in the oven. If we forget it, it means there's no lamb and beef the next day. So it's more of an understanding of how each job affects the next one. You know, we sort out all the ordering first thing in the morning when it comes in, veg order, beef order, meat order, fish order, whatever. Sort all these things out. You're dealing with all these little farmers. You spend a couple of minutes talking to these farmers every time they walk in because they're, you know, try and have a bit of a laugh with them, try and give them a reprieve for a couple of minutes before they get back out on the road. And, you know, just have a bit of jovial fun with them. And then, you know, it's just, you know, working against the prep list and saying, right, we need to do this. And we're always limited with time. We're always, you know, chasing our tails somehow. So at least if there's more time than other days to do certain, understand better systems and requirements towards the day to day, then we take the time. Other times, let's be honest, we're always chasing our tail, as I said. So it's more of a matter of, right, we're going to do this job. We're going to do it together. This is how I'm going to teach you. Then you're going to show me, and then you're going to show me again, and then I'm going to leave you alone, and I'm going to come back in 5 minutes and check on you again. And then that's sort of how it's been done to me over the years, and I feel is, you know, you're not getting things thrown at you, you're not getting yelled at, you're not getting abused, and none of that stuff's going on. You know, I didn't enjoy it as an apprentice, therefore why would I teach it to someone else, teach that way to someone else? Because whatever we're teaching now, someone else is going to be teaching an evolution or an adaptation of this idea of in the next 5 to 10 years or 20 years or whatever. So it's, you know, it's teaching these habits now of saying, right, we're going to do this way, And show me your way if you have another way of looking at it, because there's nothing set in concrete. Like, as long as we get to the finish line, I'm more than happy to adjust how you do it if it makes you feel good and if it feels good to you, instead of being a drill sergeant and saying, right, this way and this way only, do not digress from this way. You know, I don't think that's sustainable. You know, you'll never be able to take a day off if under that mentality. Or you never allow staff to not be scared to speak up or to have creativity or to build their own world of, you know, what they want to do for the rest of their lives.
And what do you feel are the biggest issues that you're seeing in the industry from your perspective?
Probably not enough time. Look, even when I was an apprentice, I didn't feel as if our big training organizations were spending enough time with us and teaching us everything. But that goes back to high school, let alone trade school. So, you know, it's all the more reason. I'm not sure if this is the answer, Danny, but I think it's all the more reason to work in good places with good people who will nurture you and guide you towards making your own mind up to what you want to do in this caper, because there's so many things to do. There's so many beautiful, amazing things and ways to reach different people in your own way that makes you happy. So the training modules, as good or bad as they are, but whatever they are, it needs to be paramount to the venue that you're in, because every training model is going to be different. So look, to answer your question instead of giving you a roundabout answer, there's a lot of things going wrong in the industry on how to train staff and how to nurture staff and how to build staff into what, you know, into having their own restaurants, having their own businesses. It's more to do with, you know, spending time. I honestly look at head coaches in football teams to being very similar to our job, to a head chef's job, because you have to spread your time around X amount of athletes or X amount of staff. You have to teach them your way, which is your experienced way of understanding of your, you know, I've got a very obsessive personality where I, you know, obsess about something to no end, and I make sure in my mind that it's, you know, that I consider this part, and that part, and why did it end up that way? And then I try and troubleshoot my own ideas, and then I handball to someone else, and then I'll see what problems they come up with. This could be something as simple as a souffle, or it can be something as simple as a jus that's been on the stove for 3 days. So it's, or, you know, there's that line where you got to, the line you got to get to, and especially that's the line we dance at a poker. There's the line you dance where you say, right, what stage where you say, we're going to produce this and make this with our own two hands, and that's our story about it, and that's our journey towards, when do you pull, get it made out of a box and you just open it up? You know what I mean? Because no, pasta making is probably the biggest thing that we teach, because pasta making out of a packet isn't nowhere near. It's good. It sustains. There's nothing wrong with packet pasta. There's a lot better packet pastas out there than what there was 20 years ago. But what I'm getting at is, there's nothing better than handmade caramelle. There's nothing better than handmade pici. You know, like, there's no, you know, to produce raviolis and stuff with your own fingers and your own hands is a lot. It's a more of a personable thing for me to say to my staff, to put onto a plate with love and care, and to serve it to a beautiful dining room that's 100 plus years old, and to have industry heavyweights like Angie and Guy doing their thing on their side and matching it with wine and beverage and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So much in what you've just said. It sounds like what you're saying is that people really need to, I mean, take what's given, and you're giving people an amazing experience. And, you know, the pasta is not just the pasta. The pasta is a way of, you know, learning that you can learn, or realizing that skills are important, or realizing that there are lots of ways to connect with the dining room through food and through the intention and the artistry with which you put something on a plate. But it also sounds like you're saying, you know, people may not always have that experience. They may not always have that sort of attention and training, but that they need to, I guess, stick their head up above the parapet and just sort of see what else is out there. Like, whether that means, you know, leaving one job for another one where you're getting more nurturing, or perhaps a kinder environment, or just really thinking about all these various pathways that are open to people working in hospitality. Am I sort of summarizing it somewhat fairly?
Yeah, without all my swings and roundabouts, yeah. Look, for me, Ipaka's that first place in my career where I've been pushed by the other side of the pass, in this case, Angie and Guy, to really wine match food. I've never worked in a vineyard. I've never worked at a winery. I've always worked in a place where I've always worked at restaurants where it's a chef owner and not a front of house owner. So that's a massive dynamic for me to learn and understand and say, right, perfect example, next week we're doing these Naosa wine dinners. Naosa Wine is a wine company out of Greece. They work with Angie over the last 15 plus years to get Greek wines into Australia. So that we're doing three events over the next couple of weeks, or five events, I think, over the next couple of weeks, where we do specific wines. Angie's going to pour like eight wines for each dinner. So she's... at the start, she was barreling. I mean, now it's a conversation. It's an interesting conversation. Was what certain foods go with certain wines, and what ingredients I have to stay away from, and what ingredients I can really use. So it's great to run this autumn winter hybrid thing right now in Melbourne, but she was saying to me the other day, like, you really need to use chestnuts. You have to use cherry tomatoes. You have to use eggplant or brassicas, duck, lamb, beef. Don't really touch citrus. I'm like, you want me to do Greek dinners, Greek wine dinners, and I'm not going to use citrus. So she's like, don't touch citrus. And then you start tasting the wine, you understand, like, okay, that's why I can't use citrus. I can't finish things with lemon and orange or lime or zest, because it'll totally throw out what's going on with the wines, all eight wines that she's going to serve on the night. So that educational component is her, you know, again, find yourself in the right environment where people can excel you and push you to being a better version of yourself, or better than what you were when you walked in. So it's, you know, Angie and Guy do that for me. And I hope we do that for our staff. So that's where it comes down to, us doing that constantly. It's the day to day. It's 365 days of the year. Like, we don't take a break from this mentality. This is a daily mentality.
That's so inspiring though, Petros, that, you know, your stage in your career, like, you're so accomplished, but you're still being pushed and you're still learning. That's really amazing.
Yeah. Look, I persist that I don't need to be at restaurants. I resisted to be away from restaurants when I started Adonis Catering. I started Adonis Catering, Danny, 5 years ago, so I could be at home. I could create a family life for myself and have a family. But as I said, the more I try and get out, the more they drag me back in. So, you know, when you got a good environment to be in, it's hard to stay out of it. Now, you can minimize the hours that you do at certain places in your grand scheme of your week. You know, do I need to be doing a catering company in a restaurant? Probably not. But I get a lot of enjoyment out of both of them, and it's loads of fun, and it's a different world. And if I was doing neither of those things or just one of them, I'd be longing for that interaction or that mentality or that mindset of what I'm missing. So it's, you know, just, it's, I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying it's easy to do 70, 80 hours a week. I'm not saying it's easy to miss my daughter growing up a little bit, or just time with my wife, or but I involve them as much as I can, wherever I can. And, you know, they enjoy it too. I think they told me anyway.
Just finally, Petros, like, for any people coming up in the industry listening to this, what would your advice be?
That's a weird one. Look, that could be – for a long, long time, I said as an apprentice, I remember hearing a quote of, like, sacrifice yourself to loneliness, fear nothing and work hard. Now, that was good for a stage of my life, a big stage of my career. I so went towards that, and I was chasing it, and I always wanted it. But then I found love. So, you know, I've got a wife now. We've got a kid. Life's good. Life's, you know, it's hard come in and out of pandemics. Business is business as it is, but it's, you know, you just got to lean towards your network, the network that you've built yourself with all these people, whether it be through cooking competitions or restaurants or places that you've worked at or places you've just admired, and you've just spoke to the staff afterwards and really enjoyed what they did. Just find enjoyment in what you do, and you can't relate our industry to, I don't know, the corporate world. You know, we're not 9-to-5ers in this world. We try to be. There's an aspect of that tries to veer us towards it, but we're not 9-to-5ers. We're, you know, 10 to 12ers, 10 to midnighters sometimes. I'm not saying you have to do 80 hours a week to be successful, but you know, you have to work hard and you have to pick your battles. So, you know, just, yeah.
I love it, Petros. So inspiring and yeah, fascinating to get an insight into your background and the way that you work and what keeps you going. Really appreciate your time and your insights on the podcast today. It's great to have you on Dirty Linen.
Thank you for doing this podcast. This has been great. It's great to listen to.
All right.
Bye.
Got the blues.
Yeah, the blues. Thanks.
This is Dirty Linen and I'm Danny Vallant. We air the issues that the hospitality industry finds hard to talk about, hearing from different people with unique perspectives. We want to hear from you as well. If you have something that needs to be said about a topic, get in touch so we can include your perspective. Contact us at dirtylinen@deepintheweeds.com.au or hit us up on Insta at Dirty Linen Podcast. We can't wait to hear from you.